Well, we introduced this concept of minimum levels for sustainable nutrition as a guideline for fertility programs or reading or evaluating soil reports a couple years ago. And since then, we've put together some more data with Micah Woods at the Asian Turfgrass Center to further refine and quantify and improve or adjust the guidelines as are needed. So in this talk, I want to just go back to consider why we want to even talk about MLSN, how the guidelines are identified, what kind of math we use to define those guidelines. I'm going to talk a little bit about growth potential and end demand in the application of the MLSN guidelines. And then we want to validate the process, and we figured we'd do that by surveying soils from around the world. And then how this project is wrapping up as an open science reproducible research program for use by others. I guess the obvious reason for evaluating MLSN is that there's been a lot of pressure for quite a few years now to reduce inputs for a variety of reasons, and if we can reduce those inputs, that'd be great. One of the ways to reduce inputs is to look at our current guidelines, and maybe they're set a little bit too high. In a lot of cases, we think they are. We want to also reduce, you know, inputs for conservation and environmental impact, so it's a pretty good reason. If we could actually find out we could reduce inputs, why don't we go in that direction? So to establish the guidelines, we took the soil test results from Pace Turf and the Asian Turfgrass Center. Now we combine the two together. It's more than 20 years worth of data, and it's around $1 million worth of investment from the end users that both Micah and Pace works with. We have a lot of metadata on performance, so we know if they're good at performing areas that the samples came from. We got a wide geographic distribution, and each of these data sets has been overlooked by either Micah or myself. So if we detect there's a lab problem, we can get those things retested. So we're pretty comfortable with the data set. So we're talking about soils from good performing areas. So we know that the level of nutrition that's in there is okay. So what are we talking about, like nines or sevens or sixes? Probably not in that kind of a level, but we're talking about it's okay. It was rated by the person who submitted the samples, which is a good target in our mind for what we're looking for now. We're looking at moderate exchange capacity soil, so we don't want to do something over 6 centimoles per kilogram. Those things are just going to have way more nutrients. They'll never need to be fertilized in some cases, maybe just a little nitrogen. We're looking at soil pHs above 5.5 and less than 8.5. We don't want to have problems with aluminum toxicity, so we want to bump them off at the ends or on the high end, availability problems with phosphorus and those types of issues. And then by doing that, by cutting the samples with those two factors, we narrowed it from 17,000 to 3,700 samples. So there's a lot of soils that feel that are outside the standard, you know, low levels that we're looking for. And this database is growing every year. So when we're talking about establishing the guideline, we're taking the 10th percentile at the bottom end as being that guide. So to figure out where the 10th percentile is on the low end of the distribution, we had to find a distribution that fit well to the sample data, and that was the log-logistic or the FISC distribution in the R programming language that we have adapted, and that's the function down on the bottom. So once you know alpha and beta, you can calculate what percentile your sample falls into. And let me just illustrate that with this graph. This is the probability density function, and you can see the bars are the actual data, and then the lines, this is the log-logistic fit to that data versus the normal distribution fit. And you can see clearly for phosphorus that the normal distribution does not describe the distribution of phosphorus throughout that wide range of soils that we looked at. If you move this to the cumulative distribution function, this is where we're able to identify the 10th percentile. So all we have to do is look at the level that 0.1%, 0.1 of the sample fall into, and it brings you down to about 20 parts per million. This would be the median halfway through, in which the normal distribution is defined up at these high levels, but not down at the bottom. So there's not even a way you could find out what the 10th percentile is with a normal distribution, because that number would be negative. So normal distribution just wouldn't work with this type of data that we're getting with soils. And all of the different elements had log-logistic distributions and not normal distributions. So now if we look at comparing the SLAN, or sufficiency levels, that has been in the literature for a while with Carol, and a lot of people have been using these, and I use these a lot. There is nothing wrong with soil levels at this level. These nutrient levels will provide excellent quality turf. I'm comfortable with those. There's nothing wrong with them. But we also know now, and we've been looking, that these lower levels, these MLSM guidelines, work just fine. But these guidelines are the base. This is the number you don't want the soil to go below. So we're saying that this is the base. Now we're not looking at for optimum number. We're just saying for sustainable nutrition, you've got to have numbers above those levels. So that's the goal of this project, is to try to figure out how low you can go and how do you keep them above that minimum level. This is where application of the model comes in, and we're talking about using growth potential, and MLSN is the baseline that we don't want to go below, and then trying to figure out what our nutrient demand is and how much we're going to extract out of that soil and then be able to replace it over the course of the year. And we know from Cussow and Soldat's work and others that in turfgrass systems, sports fields, types of turfs that we're working in, they're always nutrient deprived. So nutrient drives extraction of all the other elements, and they come out proportionally. So you increase the amount of nitrogen you put down, you got to increase the amount of phosphorus that you put down at the same time. It's not nothing new in that rate. So all we really need to do is determine about how much nitrogen we're going to put down, and then we can adjust all the other nutrients. So to calculate that, we base it on the growth potential models and an estimate of what we would expect to come off in clippings. And you can adjust these values also. For nitrogen, we're saying it's 4% nitrogen. You're going to have to put on half as much K, roughly. Now you can we have ways with the spreadsheet I'm going to show you in a minute where you can adjust these assumptions on the tissue concentration proportions also when you're looking at trying to develop a model for any particular site. So this is the growth potential model. We've been using this for a while. Brian Unruh had a paper using this model and variance to try to help with the fertilizer recommendation system in Florida. Nantucket Island uses this type of a model to help end users decide how much P to put on. So people are getting to adapt this type of model where you're trying to estimate the growth of the plant, put on what the plant needs, and not too much. So I think maybe this isn't the ultimate model in some of these types of situations, but we're looking at this type of a model or some sort of model to help drive applications of fertilizers so that we keep just the minimum level you need there and you don't get materials going off-site. So I put this one in here because Chaz here still? Yeah, Chaz is here. Because we've been talking about this for a while with the anthracnose on POA. This is New Brunswick, and this is average air temperature. You can find this spreadsheet at this location, and it's also been on the GCSA AIPM template since 2007. And it will calculate out the amount of nitrogen that is needed based on that growth model and a maximum amount of N per month. This is grams per meter squared. That you would expect to use. And in the end, you come up with about 3 pounds, a little over 3 pounds of N per thousand square per thousand. So that's about 3 pounds per thousand. And if you put that amount on, these are the levels that you're expecting to withdraw from clippings in that system. So that's the number of parts per million you're going to pull out of the soil. And if you add the MLSN guidelines so you don't dip below it, for the course of an entire year, you're going to have levels at this high. So this is what refined some of the ways we're looking at fertilizers over what has been done in the past, is that we're trying to get a feel for the distribution of nutrient demands through the year based on when you're pulling your soil sample. So how long, when you pull a soil sample in the past, you got to get a number. Well, how long is that supposed to last? Nobody really tells you. They just give you a recommendation to pull it up. But what we're saying in this example, that we're expecting the turf in New Brunswick to pull out 58 parts per million potassium. We say that we don't want the soils to dip below 37 parts per million because we know that's going to get us into an end where we're probably going to get into a deficit. So if you're trying to figure out what the entire year load would be, if you wanted to run a whole year, you'd need 95 parts per million potassium in the system. So if you're going to try to estimate for a year, you wouldn't need that much for half a year, but that gives you an idea of how much nutrient would be expected to be in be required in a soil test to get you through the year. I hope that makes pretty clear sense. It's not a complicated topic. You want to compare that to the SLAN. It comes out just about where the SLAN is for the K, but most of the other levels are lower. And then as you consider these tests, when they're taken and how long the SLAN test is expected to represent has never been described. So to validate the study, we looked at the Global Soil Survey. We initiated it in 2013. It's a citizen science project. People pay $250 for a sample kit. We get these kits go out around the country. International samples have PPQ 526 permits for customs to get them back in the States. And then we provide the data to and reports to the clients. And we're also providing the data for any of you if you want to look at it. So far, we've had 84 samples returned. We validated the guidelines and we have some small modifications. There's in the public repository has that data that's available. This column with original are the initial guidelines that were developed when they were presented at the Boyukas conference and also here in 2012. This is the new data set where we have all the data combined, but there's more data from the Asian Turfgrass Center. And you can compare it to the Global Soil Survey data, and there's very small changes, pretty good drop in calcium levels, and this probably represents the impact between more heavily southwestern weighted samples that have more calcium in them compared to more of the samples that have been coming from around the country. So overall, the data came out to be pretty similar. We're very comfortable with the guidelines and how they go throughout the world. It looks like we have a good general level that you don't want to go below. That's the key. The MLSN guidelines, you don't want to go below. When you're trying to figure out what your soil test means, you got to figure out how much nitrogen you're going to put on, and you need to adjust the fertility to keep you above that level based on the nitrogen that you apply. This is the GitHub repository that Michael Woods put together, and the R program that is used to produce the MLSN guidelines is included with the data. So this is a typical reproducible research project where you have the code that generates the report included with the data. So it allows you to go back, check our data out, check the code to make sure it's right, and see how the report is generated. And we'll be adding in the rest of the data by the end of this year, and there will be a submission to a major journal somewhere by the end of the year. Mike is sort of deciding which ones he wants to put to. He's very excited about the open source issues, and some of the crop science journals have such a long time before you can get the general public can get to them. He's having trouble with that access, so that, or paying $1,000 to get the access. Okay, do we have any questions?
We have time for questions.
Yes. Yeah, well, sort of, but that's some of this, the ideas of working the data this way came from diagnostic samples we worked with. We've more looked at it for areas like there's a phosphorus deficiency and to see whether those levels fall below or right near the guidelines, and they generally fall below where we're looking as soon as you pull them up. In fact, there's some reports on our website where we're looking at Olson phosphorus, not Mellick 3 in this case, but Olson phosphorus in a high pH situation, where the guideline for Olson phosphorus, which I didn't present here, is at 8 parts per million, and these were down at 5, and then we added phosphorus to them, only brought them up a couple parts per million, and it reversed the phosphorus deficiency. So they're right. The guidelines are pretty good so far as we can tell. As far as on the upper side of things, we have those numbers, and we have a measurement called the sustainability index, which is basically what you're talking about. We're encouraging people to look at their index to try to drop it down. So it's the probability that of the log logistic distribution that their sample falls on. So if they have instead of 0.1, if they work it backwards, it's like 90%, like you're saying, they're way out on the high end. So they have a lot of room they can move it back without any problem. And then we have some where we're out on the 99th or beyond, and we know those are out there, but you don't see a lot of toxicities for most stuff, you know, we can run those on like sodium and aluminum, but not most of the other nutrients.
Okay, actually, we're going to have to leave it there. I'm sorry. Can we thank our speaker?